Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Downtown means different things to different cities. Downtowns change over time. Noted urban planner and former Deputy Commissioner of Housing and City Planning, Alexander Garvin, believes deeply that cities must protect and invest in their downtowns. He writes in his new book, The Heart of the City, Creating Vibrant Downtowns for a New Century, that, quote, the future of our cities are moored in the health of their downtowns, and that if we are to have healthy downtowns, we need to understand what downtown is all about and how and why some American downtowns are in trouble while others are thriving. Gavin is currently president and CEO of AGA Public Realm Strategist Incorporated, a planning and design firm in New York City, and an adjunct professor at Yale School of Architecture. From 2002 to 2003, he was responsible for planning the rebuild of the World Trade Center for the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation. And for the last half century, he has worked in five New York City administrations. Alex, welcome to All of It.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So the word downtown is interesting because New Yorkers think about downtown in a very different way than other cities think about downtown. So what is considered New York's downtown, and how does it differ from others?
Well, the first thing to remember is that many cities have more than one downtown. Houston has three, Atlanta has three, Philadelphia has two, and we are acquiring new downtowns by the minute. If you go to Long Island City or Dumbo, those are new downtowns. When I was growing up, there were only two downtowns: Midtown and Lower Manhattan. And Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, was beginning to happen. Now this is old hat.
So to have a downtown, to be a downtown, as you've just described, these cities having multiple downtowns, what does a downtown have to have, need to be one?
First, it has to be the repository of knowledge and culture. Second, it has to be a place which generates new jobs, new businesses, new technology, new ideas. It has to be a place that has more than just office buildings. Today, a downtown is a high-density, mixed-use place with museums and libraries and retail stores.
How important is public space in a downtown?
For me, the most important. To me, the two central features are a great public realm and a great transit system to get you there. For example, Denver taxed itself at the beginning of this century to build light rail lines into all the suburban counties and to the airport. You take the light rail downtown, you get out, you get on a free bus on 16th Street, a pedestrianized street, a great street, with sculptures and performers and all for pedestrians, no automobiles, and a free bus. And you can get to work, to play, for happy hour, to the state capitol, to the city hall, to the auditorium, the convention center, the performing arts center, and two or three stadiums. That's the downtown.
It's about access, it sounds like. It has to be easy for people to be there.
Yes, absolutely. What I say in much of my writing is it's got to be open to anyone, and it's got to have something for everybody.
Of all the criteria you need to have to be a successful downtown, what is the most challenging to achieve?
A civil society, to nurture a civil society. We have a place in New York that does it every day, all the time. I was there, in fact, today, Grand Central Terminal. In the big space in Grand Central Terminal, at rush hour, there are hundreds of people going in all directions, and nobody bumps into anybody else. That is a place that nurtures a civil society. That's the most challenging.
But years ago, you wouldn't walk through Grand. You wouldn't want to spend more than 5 minutes in Grand Central.
That's correct. Absolutely. Most people don't remember that.
Oh, I remember that.
I do, too. I also tell people that the other place like that, just a few blocks away, was Bryant Park. Exactly.
So there has to be political will.
Yes. But there also has to be skill and management. What if you don't have good management, it doesn't work. In the case of Bryant Park, it was changed not so much by reorganizing the staircases and planting and the seating, but because Dan Bielerman knew how to hire the people who would pick up the trash, walk around to make sure there were no vagrants disturbing people, schedule movies in the summertime, jugglers at noon, and look over this and make sure it was always in good repair, including the comfort stations.
How do we pay for these downtowns?
It depends on the downtown. The most interesting feature that changed the downtowns roughly 25 years ago, 30 years ago, are the business improvement districts. We have 1,400 business improvement districts in the United States. What happened was at the end of the Second World War, there was a great demand for increased services. People wanted garbage pickup twice a week. They wanted to have police patrols. They began to be afraid. They wanted to keep the streets clean. So the local council people said, well, we don't have enough money. Of course, they voted these services for their constituents. The one place that didn't have constituents was downtown. Downtown in 1950 was a sleepy business district that went to bed at 6 o'clock on Friday and awakened at 6 o'clock on Monday morning. There were no people living there. That was not true 200 years ago. What then happened was eventually there was a revolt. The property owners and businesses and workers who were downtown said, okay, you're not going to provide the services, we will. Tax us. And they created, by government legislation, districts, small districts, that taxed the property owners. The tax went to an organization run by the people and businesses downtown. They hired the street sweeping, the garbage collection, the security personnel, and all of a sudden, downtowns began to be transformed. The earliest BID in New York City was Bryant Park.
My guest is Alexander Garvin. The name of his book is The Heart of the City, Creating Vibrant Downtowns for a New Century. You write there are three trajectories that have been happening in downtowns. First, the downtowns that have been thriving, Uptown Houston, Buckhead, and Atlanta. The downtowns like Detroit that went into decline, and then the downtowns like Lower Manhattan and downtown LA that are resurgent after a decline.
You read The Heart of the City very well.
Thank you. So what are the characteristics of downtown LA and downtown New York that really paved the way for their resurgence?
Well, I figured this out 2 years ago when the PATH terminal reopened in Lower Manhattan. I went down to look at it. Your listeners may not know, but for the first 15 months after 9/11, I was in charge of rebuilding Lower Manhattan. All my life, Lower Manhattan had been in decline. I saw my job as not simply rebuilding the World Trade Center, but reversing a half century of decline. I went to meetings all the time in Lower Manhattan after that job. I didn't bother to look around. I went to the PATH terminal and I said, well, I haven't been here to look around in 15 years. I'll walk around and see what's going on. To my astonishment, it was thriving. I went home. I went on the internet to see what the numbers were. Lower Manhattan, in the last 25 years, had lost one quarter of its office space. There were 9,000 more private sector jobs. My first reaction was, that's not possible. But I'm a trained architect. We're obviously using less space per worker. In fact, in 1970, we used 500 square feet. Today, it's 150. That means that everybody moved out of the Class B older buildings into the new, well-wired, internet-connected buildings, leaving these other buildings empty. The real estate development community bought these buildings, and owner after owner began renovating them as housing. So that in 1970, we had 800 people living in Lower Manhattan. Today, we have over 60,000. They're now living in those converted old office buildings. So my conclusion was, well, that's what's going on here. Is it happening anywhere else? So I went online and I thought the least likely reviving downtown would be Los Angeles. I was wrong. It was even more different in Los Angeles. They had more people living downtown than in Lower Manhattan.
There's also something interesting in the book about how different cities, it's not, you just can't blanket this. If you have a waterfront, it will look like this. And you use Cleveland and Baltimore as an example about how two different cities use their waterfront.
Yes. Well, again, you obviously know a lot about these things. When I was in college, Cleveland was well known for the river that burned. It was polluted, and they needed to do something. They cleaned up the edges. Clearly, it's an environmental, no longer environmental disaster. But Baltimore understood much more. They moved their shipping industry and everything connected with it 2 miles further into Chesapeake Bay, opening up all the piers in downtown Baltimore. They then began to determine how do you redevelop the edges. And the biggest developer in Baltimore was James Rouse. He had recently won the competition for Quincy Market in Boston. And that was a new downtown shopping facility in a very narrow building, maybe 80 or 90 feet wide. He said, we should build this fresh in Baltimore. And he worked to get the approvals. He was from Baltimore originally. And they recreated the downtown. They have ball fields. They have a convention center. They have hotels. They have museums. They have an aquarium and all of this retail activity. And all the area around it began to revive, including the medical school there, part of the university. And while the rest of Baltimore is troubled and has difficulties, downtown is thriving. Cleveland didn't understand that it had to bring a new market downtown. They were losing residents to the suburbs. The people who worked downtown would go shopping in the suburbs. The same thing happened in many cities around the United States, in New Haven, in Bridgeport, in Chicago, and they were losing customers. The difference is that Cleveland could not figure out how to get them back, and they are now slowly coming back. The most interesting of these smaller cities that came back, I think, I didn't believe was going to come back, Cincinnati. When at the beginning of this century, there were famous race riots in Cincinnati. I had been there the previous 5-10 years. It was the worst of probably any American city, filled with vagrants. After the riot, the mayor went to Procter & Gamble and the other large corporations and said, I want you to donate money. We will create a community development corporation. And they will renovate these buildings. What they were clever about is they bought initially those buildings that had on the ground floor retailers that were either bars or liquor stores. They got rid of the bars and liquor stores. They began fixing up the rest of the buildings and renting them out at prices young people could afford. They also had the money to fix the parks, to create a new one, to renovate the arts facilities. They had a concert hall and a theater. And now they have a thriving downtown. I thought that would have been impossible.
I'm interested in, is there any, to people who are creating downtowns and creating these plans and making these huge leaps in these investments, do they have responsibilities, though, to the people you've mentioned, the vagrants, people who are homeless, people who had low-income housing in these places? Do they have a responsibility to try to help these people find a place to be?
The question has two different sets of people. The downtown is changing because of property owners. Sometimes it's changing because the government has policy changes. It's the government's responsibility, not the landlord's responsibility. No landlord is going to rent for less money than they can get on the market. Homeless requires subsidies. You need governments that are willing to put up that money. It's the only way it'll work.
The name of the book is Heart of the City. My guest has been Alexander Garvin. You can catch him tomorrow night at the 92nd Street Y in conversation with Paul Goldberger. Thanks for joining us on All of It.